Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, November the 20th. We are a week away from Thanksgiving and roughly 5 weeks away from Christmas Day, although, as you know, Christmas usually starts a little bit early. So let's just say that we are right now beginning these next 5 to 6 weeks are the big rush to the holiday, rush to the end of the year, three of the biggest days of the year, Thanksgiving, Christmas Day, and, of course, New Year's Day. All of this happening over the next 6 weeks, and then after that, well, then we get the Iowa primary. I guess that things change a little bit as the new year comes in. Today we're going to be chatting with our friend George Rodriguez down in South Texas. We're going to get his perspective on the impeachment. And you know, one of the advantages that George has is that he worked in the federal government, so he interacted many times with bureaucrats, and sometimes bureaucrats tend to think that you know, they're smarter than anybody else, and they have fights with the president and all of that. So we're going to get into that topic, as well as the impeachment proceedings this week. Again, this is not an impeachment. This is an impeachment inquiry, and it's a big distinction, because if this was a real impeachment, we would have a trial, and we would have a lot different witnesses, I think. In fact, I don't think there would be any witnesses if this was a real impeachment. So we'll get into all of that with George. I just want to wish very quickly happy number 74 to Rick Monday. Now, if you're a baseball fan, you know that name, Rick Monday. Rick was really a very good baseball player. He was with the A's originally, then he was with the Cubs. That's where he spent most of his career in the 1970s with the Cubs. And then he was traded to the Dodgers in 1981 and hit a ninth inning home run in the postseason that was very famous. But his biggest claim to fame was in April of 1976. They were playing an afternoon game in Wrigley, and he took center field, and then he looked to his right and he saw a couple of guys who were trying to burn an American flag. And Rick ran, he grabbed the flag, he saved the flag. And, of course, the two guys were arrested. So, you know, Rick is never going to get into the Hall of Fame because of his batting stats. He was a pretty good ball player, but not a Hall of Famer, a very good ball player. But what he did that day for the American flag, I think, really stands out in my mind. Let me say hello to George Rodriguez. How are you, George?
Well, good, buddy. How are you?
Absolutely great. Do you recall that story of Rick Monday and the American flag?
I do. I really do. I remember because, mostly because my parents made a big deal about it. My dad, of course, was a big baseball player or baseball fan. He had played in the minor leagues here in Texas way back in the 1940s. And,
wow.
You know, he followed baseball like religion. He was also very, 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 very patriotic. And when you combine the two, like in that incident, I mean, he went wild.
Yeah. Well, that was such a – that was, of course, before cable.
Yeah.
I mean, those were the days where you would read about these things the next day in the paper or maybe in the evening news or whatever. But I mean, it was just a great moment, you know, for a guy to save the American flag. And you know, it came in the bicentennial year. So I guess that also added some meaning to it all. You know, we were very patriotic, as I recall, that year, 1976,
yep.
You know, so it was just the right moment. So Rick Monday, he's 74 today. That's always makes me feel old when the baseball players I remember are in their mid-70s, George.
Yeah, it does. I mean, you know, time flies when you're having fun.
That's it. Time flies when you're remembering good things. Well, George, how is the weather in San Antonio? We had a pretty nice day. A little rain here and there. Nothing heavy. Just enough to get your windshield wet, but nothing heavy. And it was a nice temperature day. So what was it like in San Antonio?
It was one of those Chamber of Commerce days. It was absolutely fantastic. Really, really beautiful. We got started out a little cloudy, and then it ended up coming out, the sun coming out. And it was 81 degrees, and light breeze, not too humid. Absolutely beautiful.
Yes. Well, it wasn't absolute. It was not a, let me put it this way, it was not a Chamber of Commerce day down here, but it was a very nice day. It was a really, really nice day down here. Just absolutely, absolutely great. Well, you know, we want to get into the impeachment and a little bit maybe go back and talk a little bit about some of your experiences in the federal government, particularly with bureaucrats who didn't like the president. But before we do, let me just touch on DACA. DACA was before the Supreme Court. And I don't know, you know, you never know how the court's is going to react to all of this. But the impression I got from some of the analysts was that the people defending DACA did not make a better case than the people, the Trump administration, that was pointing out that DACA was never, you know, legal in the first place. That's what the analysts are saying, at least the analysts that I read. Are you hearing the same, George?
Yeah, I spoke to, in fact, I spoke to one of the attorneys mm-hmm. who works for one of the firms that mm-hmm. was there supporting the president, one of the law firms in D.C. that was there supporting the president's position. And they were trying to figure out, because, of course, you know, the attorneys will get together and try to figure out what the opposing arguments are going to be so that they can counter them. And they were having a very difficult time trying to figure out, you know, what the opposing arguments were going to be that would hold it, that would merit any water, you know, that would merit any kind of legal support from the court. The only thing they could come up with was that a lot of these folks, you know, had been here a long time. The only thing mm-hmm. that they came up with were arguments regarding sympathy, but nothing
right,
legal.
Right.
Nothing on a legal basis. When you reach the Supreme Court, you know, feelings. No, you know, like Judge Judy says. You know, that's a different show.
Right.
We're here to talk about the law. We're not here to talk about your feelings.
Exactly. No, and that was exactly my reaction. And in fact, I was here on a local station, and that was in essence what the other side was saying, that, you know, look, these poor kids got left, you know, had sort of got stranded here. You know, they were they signed up for DACA and now they got stranded. In other words, their case was purely emotional. Now, to be honest with you, I understand their argument because they bought into something that didn't turn out to be, you know, what was the best for them. So I can understand their emotional arguments, but I think you're right. I think when it goes to the Supreme Court, that's not going to win the argument there. They're going to have to say, you know, that President Trump did something illegal, and I don't know how you do that. I mean, because it was never, as you know, George, it was never the law of the land. It was an executive order where the president was acting, as I understand it, within his discretion. But
it wasn't even an executive order. I mean, when you look at it more carefully, it was a memo of understanding. It was not even an executive order. So in that aspect of it, you know, it shot more holes in the situation. So it was something that was a stretch of the law by
right.
Obama for a group of folks who had no real status. It just doesn't hold water. It just doesn't hold water.
Right. Well, that's exactly right. And I think that there would have been a better way to solve the problem. You know, a year or so ago, President Trump said that he'd be willing to negotiate the Dreamers as part of a larger, border package. But they didn't want to negotiate with Trump. I mean, they do not want to negotiate or give Trump any victory, and I think they're hurting their own cause. I really do. I think that if the Supreme Court sides with the administration, I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, actually, either way, I don't know what's going to happen, because let's say the Supreme Court says that Trump did something wrong, what is the next? I mean, what are they going to do? Reactivate DACA? But there's nothing to reactivate. It's already lapsed, George.
Well, you know, this situation, I fault the Democrats completely and totally, because
yes.
This discussion of DACA began when Obama took office, and when
right.
the Democrats controlled both the Senate and the House.
Mm-hmm.
And, they could have done something at that point. I mean, there he was in the White House pontificating and in control of the House and the Senate. And instead, they went ahead and prioritized Obamacare.
That's right.
They could have added to it DACA. They could have been part of an immigration reform. And like Obama told the Republicans, they all had to sit at the back of the bus because they had lost.
Mm-hmm.
They could have done something at that point. Then there have been other times that have been presented, like this situation most recently, where Trump offered, to do something about it, and they refused. Again, they have
right.
refused. So,
right.
When it comes down to it, I mean, the Democrats have just taken these people for granted and taken them on a nasty ride. That's
it. No, you are exactly right, and that is the story. I mean, they have basically used these people politically, and they remember them on Election Day. And the rest of the time, they don't really care about them. So, we'll see. We'll see how it all pans out. Well, let's talk a little bit about impeachment, George, because we've had these hearings. These are not, of course, formal impeachment hearings. This is what they call an inquiry, which is, of course,
this is a smear campaign.
Yeah. Well, another way of avoiding the issue, frankly, because. As I said the other day on local TV, that the difference between an impeachment hearing, a true impeachment hearing, and an inquiry is like when the young man says, "I'm going to visit with your father tonight to ask for your hand for marriage." Okay, so I'm going to ask for your hand tonight for marriage. An inquiry is like when you tell your girlfriend, "I'm still wondering if you're the girl I should marry." And those are two entirely different situations. One is a decision that you've made. The other one is a decision you don't want to make. And here what we have, and this is how I explain this so-called inquiry. They have a political problem. They have a base that has been wanting to impeach Trump since he got elected. But on the other hand, they have a bunch of Democrats in Trump districts who don't really want to mess with this. So in order to take care of both, they did the inquiry, but they didn't do the impeachment. That's how I look at it, George. I mean, to me, that's what they're doing. They're playing both sides of this game. I don't know how else to explain it, because if, in fact, they had evidence, they'd be doing the full thing, George.
Exactly. They would have, if they had the evidence and if they had the witnesses, they would be doing it, wide open, in the open, where the witnesses would speak to the public and say, "Look, this is what happened. This is what it is, blah, 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 boom, boom, boom." Instead, they have gone behind closed doors, prepared their arguments, prepared their who they're going to bring to the forefront, without allowing the other side to do likewise. And then when you hear these testimonies amount to, I didn't think it was right, and I thought it went against the policy that we had. Nobody cares. Nobody cares when, the president, when a party and a president wins the election, he is called the chief executive because the entire executive branch is mm-hmm. supposed to follow him. Now,
right, right.
From personal experience, I will tell you, from personal experience,
yes.
The Reagan administration and even in the Bush administration, when we went in, I will tell you, there was screaming and yelling and dragging of feet. folks who had felt that the Carter administration was doing the best, you know, and was doing what should be done and had the right policies and whatnot. I mean, the first, I would say the first 3 years, I mean, that long,
right.
We had such a difficult time in finding folks that would work with us. I mean, you know, as ridiculous as that sounds, but finding bureaucrats, high-level bureaucrats, bureaucrats that are paid, you know, the executive pay, you know, $120,000 a year.
Right.
These the executives that were refusing to work with us because we didn't know what we were doing. And they were very polite in telling us that. They were very polite in telling us that we did not understand how the agency functioned. We did not understand what the agency actually did, how the agency functioned. I mean, it was incredible to hear these people talk to us this way when they should have just been, we would say, okay, let's get this done. Here's the direction we want to go. Boom, take care of it.
Right.
No,
exactly.
They would argue because we're not supposed to go in that direction. The people that they are dragging to the forefront on this whole situation with the Ukraine, to me, are nothing more than folks who felt comfortable implementing the policies of Obama and did not feel comfortable in implementing the policies of Trump, and who are upset and angry and very just disgruntled. And I have yet to hear something that he did wrong. I really do.
Right. Well, that's the whole point. That's the whole point. I mean, what is the impeachable offense? I mean, what did he actually? And I thought, let me take a quick break, George, and we'll come back because I want to develop this point further.
Sure.
Because this is to me, this is the key. What did he do wrong? Where is the impeachable offense? I mean, we had a situation today at the hearings or at the Congress today where I thought it was like watching two shows. In the morning it was one show, and in the afternoon it was an entirely different show. But let me take a little break. We're chatting with our friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio, and we're going to listen right now to just a little bit of the music of Carlos Guedes, and I remind you to check his link. We have a link to his website as well as his schedule on the show information, so check that. Check that out, and if you're in Dallas or if you live in Dallas, check out where he's at and enjoy some of the music. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. Again, just a quick reminder, check on that link and see where my friend Carlos is playing around town. Just an absolutely great friend of our show, as well as a great musician. And if you're in the Dallas area, you know him because he plays around quite a bit. He's the guy with the background music when you're having a nice quiet dinner with your wife or with a friend. Let's get back to our friend George Rodriguez in South Texas. George, I thought today, now I didn't watch, I don't have time to watch it, honestly. I mean, to be honest about it, I cannot sit there and watch this thing all day long because I've got things to do. I mean, I got a life, I got business, so I got things to do. So I didn't watch it. But I heard, the bits and pieces. And I thought, in the morning, they were basically saying, bombshell, it's over for Trump. They even misquoted Ken Starr. Ken Starr never said that this is the moment the Republicans are going to see the president. He said in the event of something bad, that's what would happen, but he doesn't think that's going to happen. So, I mean, he was completely misquoted in what he said. But then comes the afternoon, George. And the same guy who in the morning was making bombshells in the afternoon was basically running away from what he said, because I thought Jim Jordan, our fellow here in Texas, Caldwell, I think it is, and the fellow in Ohio, Turner, I thought these three guys completely destroyed this gentleman today, who's supposed to be a good man, George. He's supposed to be a good guy. He's not a bad person, and he's a distinguished diplomat. But I think they caught him in so many contradictions, and I thought when Jim Jordan said, well, what meeting are we talking about? Well, there was never a meeting, so what are we talking about then? I just thought this witness this afternoon should have gone home and written a letter of apology to the American people saying, I just made a fool out of myself. That's how I felt, George.
It very much showed again that these folks care more about what they feel that they're supposed to do than the actual Constitution and following, you know, and respecting that there is a new direction to go because there's a new president who was duly elected by the people. Instead, they are so arrogant and so self-centered that they know what's best, they know what needs to be done, and they know how things should be handled. And that is the thing that has always been since 1981 when I went in and first saw, you know, the bureaucrats' behavior, these high-level bureaucrats' behavior. I have just sat by and just freaked out every time I hear them carry on about how they know what's best, and they really do believe that. I mean, you know, their sincerity is very, very high on that point. Mm-hmm. They are career people, and they know what is best because that is their job. Well, that's fine and dandy. How about you follow the Constitution and you do what's best according to what the people want?
No, but George, my point has always been with bureaucrats. Now, as you know this better than anybody else. There's two levels of there's two kinds of bureaucrats. You've got your career people, the ones who are put there. Well, your political appointments are put there by the president, and then of course you have the civil service, the people who simply go
career
from one
people,
administration
right.
to the other. Career people, yeah. And those people, I mean, the career people are generally, they're not generally in sensitive decision making. They're usually just administrative people. But I think that, you know, if you're working for a president and you are concerned about, let's say, a phone call that he had, well, first of all, you don't run to the Democrat Party to get instructions, as the so-called whistleblower did. And then the other thing you do is, if you're really, really concerned, then you resign. I will tell you that there was one incident, you probably remember this, when Jimmy Carter, President Jimmy Carter, authorized the attack or the hostage rescue, that we had a Secretary of State at the time, Cyrus Vance, who resigned because he couldn't support the policy. He said, "I know I cannot support the military action," so he resigned. I admire that. I admire that. If you don't believe it, resign. But these people, they want to keep their jobs, but at the same time, they want to do sabotage against the president. Well, I'm sorry, you don't get to do that when you're a bureaucrat. You follow the rules, and if you don't like something, you resign. But I mean, this whole thing with the phone call is crazy. Apparently nobody's heard the phone call, George. It's amazing. Nobody's heard the phone call.
But they heard about it.
They heard about it. Exactly. Yeah, they heard about it. And, you know, they heard about it. And they heard about it like from, you know, Johnny told Peter and Peter told Thomas and Thomas told Luke. And, you know, but they never actually heard about it. But, you know, George, one last thing I wanted to say. This is, I think, the reason that they didn't really go through the formal impeachment, because I think they know that they do not have the goods to impeach him, and they don't want to have to explain that, because if you do impeachment, I mean, if you decide to write articles of impeachment, you're going to have a discussion and explain to the American people why you think an impeachable offense was made. And there's so many holes in these presentations. I don't know how anybody with a straight face can support that. I mean, you know, some people will, because they've been wanting to impeach him from day one. But I'm talking about many of these moderate Democrats who are going to have to defend that vote. I think they're going to have a hard time, George.
Look, I can tell you from personal experience. In 1983,
yes.
I was nominated for a position at the Justice Department that required Senate confirmation. I was sabotaged by an anonymous letter or a series of anonymous letters that were published in the Washington Post and in the New York Times as fact, because it was a fact that somebody had published the letter, right? Had circulated the anonymous letter, and turns out the anonymous letter was put together by some bureaucrats, some career bureaucrats who did not want me to take the position and then take the agency in a direction that they disagreed with. That I know from fact because it happened to me. This is what is happening here. We have a president who is so non-traditional, who is so outside the loop of the establishment in Washington, D.C., that these bureaucrats don't know what to do. The politicians don't know what to do, let alone the bureaucrats.
Well, George, my feeling is that, we elect somebody president, and that person should be allowed to serve in the presidency until we have another election. And then
exactly.
If you don't like him, change him. Okay.
Exactly.
But he is the president. He was elected, and many of these people have been on a madness campaign to destroy Trump. And I just don't think that it's good for the country. I don't think it's good for the Democrats. But we'll see how that pans out. But I just cannot believe that these hearings are going to go on too much longer, because I don't think they're persuading anybody. I mean, basically they're preaching to the choir. That's how I see it. They're preaching to the choir, and that's about as far as it goes, George.
You got it. Yeah. Well, you know, the sad thing about it is that that there are a lot of people who may fall for it because they just listen to what the media says in the morning, and then they're off and running. So
right.
I certainly hope people are hearing the whole story, that
right.
They're understanding it, but we shall see.
Well, we shall see, but I mean, there is apparently, there's some, probably anywhere from 40 to 46% who think that he should be impeached. And I'd love to ask any one of those people, impeach for what? I mean, impeachment is something pretty serious. You just don't impeach somebody because, you voted for the other person. But anyway, George, we'll keep this story. They're having a debate tonight, I'll try to catch up with it later. The Democrats are having a debate tonight. I think the flavor of the week is now Mayor Pete. He seems to be the flavor of the week, and we'll see how he does. We'll see how he does.
I love that they keep gaining more candidates rather than
yes.
losing them.
I agree. I agree with you. And I guess Julian Castro did not make this one.
Nope, he didn't.
He didn't. So
he didn't.
Maybe
apparently, there aren't enough Hispanics that followed him.
Right. Right. I think. Yeah. He kind of. I think maybe if he spoke more about what Hispanics really want to hear about, rather than talking about abortions for transgenders, maybe he would do better with Hispanics. So we'll do another show in the future, George, and take a look at the Democrats. But we've got some holidays coming up, George. I want to wish you and your family a happy Thanksgiving, a happy Christmas. Not much, but we'll probably do a show before Christmas. So let's not wish you a Merry Christmas yet. But I got to ask you a prediction: who's winning between the Patriots and the Cowboys? That's a big game on Sunday.
I would love to see the Cowboys win. I don't know. I'm hoping that that the Cowboys win, but somehow I just think the Patriots, as much as I dislike them.
Yeah, well, I think they're also playing in New England too, which is apparently a pretty tough place to beat them. George, have a wonderful day, and as always, thank you for your participation. It's always a lot of fun to chat these political debates with you.
You got it, buddy. You got it. Thank you very, very much. Have a good one.
Thank you so much. Our good friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio, and of course getting his thoughts on on the fact that Julian Castro, who used to be the mayor of San Antonio, and then he then became a cabinet member in the Obama administration, he's out of the debate. He's out of the debate. Not surprised, not surprised, because he wasn't doing very well. And I think they have some, you got to have a certain number, I guess, to get into this debate, and he didn't make it. We'll talk more about the debate tomorrow and Friday when I've had a chance to see more of it. Have a wonderful evening, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.